All right. I'd like to welcome everybody to the July 19th, 2018 regular meeting of the Marysville Board of Education. Can we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Luke?
Here.
Ms. Savage?
Here.
Ms. Powers?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Devine?
Here. And now, if you will stand up and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Flag is back there.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Cochran, and your sidekicks for hosting our meeting tonight. We're excited to hear your presentation in a few minutes. First up, I need a motion to adopt our agenda tonight. Motion by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith. Roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. And before you start your presentation, I just wanted to welcome. We have a guest tonight, a teacher from Triad who happens to be a Marysville graduate. She's here to observe our meeting, so welcome. I think you're going to be on the edge of your seat the whole night. So
I've been to three so far, and they've
okay.
all been exciting.
Okay, great. So with that, I'd like to welcome the high school, Mr. Cochran, and your staff for your presentation.
Thank you. Apologize, I have to hook in behind you here.
That's quite all right. Standing room only.
I'm thinking maybe I sent the wrong date out. Or
could that must be?
Maybe
or the wrong location.
StubHub said they were sold out or something. Along
right.
Line. So we're gonna go ahead and talk a little bit about the high school and kind of briefly mention a little bit about the 17-18 school year, but really focus on what we've been doing the last part of the second semester, rolling into May, June, and also present, and how we're going to roll into the beginning of the school year. You all remember we had our first joint graduation at Marysville Schools. I think it was an awesome affair. I feel like everything went very well, minus the few hiccups that happened from time to time, and especially an outdoor type of event. We have barely missed the catastrophic thunderstorm that yeah. probably have delayed us by about 3 or 4 hours there, but everything went well. Tom Howard just left, and I think he saved our day there, getting everything ready and set up for graduation. So we were excited to end there as we kind of kick off the summer. We're really looking at what we had established needed to be done 17-18 school year and going into the 18-19 school year, and we had a great PD session in May. We got a group of about 12 or 13 teachers who are going to be our cohort kind of exploratory leaders that we'll talk about here moving forward, so we can move towards our goals of 2020. We gave kind of a warm-up presentation during our monthly admin council meetings at the board office. And one of the things that we need to do is be brutally honest with ourselves about what we're doing well and what needs to improve. If you can see on the left side, obviously our achievement of a D is not acceptable and is not up to snuff and the standards that we want to hold ourselves to and what we need to do for our students. On the right is the progress, which is an A. So we've said often, we are growing kids to the expectations that they are supposed to grow and then a little bit beyond. However, they are not meeting that 700 air score in our 7 tested areas as a group. So we need to make sure that we're doing better at that, because with high school air scores, even if you get 80% to pass, the 20% then goes back into the hopper the next time you test as kids that are taking it again, really for the first time, according to the state. So those students continue to grow. So if you have 80% passage, 20% not passage, the next year you do 80-20 again. And before you know it, the exponential growth of the group that is not passing ends up continuing to grow and grow and grow. I have kind of another example of that, and I'm going to just show you here. And really, this is one of the things that DataLize is really driving our conversations. I know this is a little bit small here. I'll try to magnify it. So if you look at the seven tested areas here, I just highlighted English 9. So our freshmen had a passage rate of about 84%, which is good for those 84%. It's not acceptable that we have 16% of kids going through and not passing that freshman test. So we need to focus on our Tier 1 instruction to make sure that number increases. What is glaringly obvious also is our second attempt score. If you follow to the right on that red line, if students don't pass that first time, what they do is they go on to the next class. And these passage rates for second attempts are abysmal, really, to say it in no other way, because those scores are so low because the kids get removed from the curriculum. And under the old OGT days, it wasn't a huge deal for the school because those students weren't counted again. These students are counted again, which is besides the point, because we got to do right by those kids and make sure that they are passing. And they have not been, in the last couple years, given enough intervention to do well on that second attempt. The third attempt numbers get even worse. So what happens is you have a student that, you have a student that continues. Third attempt is 4%, 17%, and there's one anomaly down there with the 76% because I think there was only about a handful of kids that took that. So kids do worse and worse the farther they get from it. And then for a student who struggles, they also pile up on tests. You have two tests your freshman year, and you have four tests your sophomore year. So you could look at a junior who has struggled now having to take seven tests all in one sitting. And so this is what really drove a lot of our conversations of what are we going to do differently to make sure that we can address that. Number one, as I mentioned, is to increase our Tier 1 instruction so we have more students getting a higher level of education the first time in the seated class. And then secondly, identify Tier 2 instructional areas where we can give those kids exactly what they need to make sure they're passing that second and or third attempt and to continue to grow those students. We do have some students that the path might be they got 40% lower, 40 points low, like a 660, and then maybe it's a 680, and maybe they passed on that third attempt. But celebrating that growth and getting those kids to realize that there is hope for them to do well is important. Also, the state, as you might know, you probably had conversations about this, the state is dragging their feet on exactly whether or not they're going to have a grad option. We had somewhere in the 30 range of students that took advantage of a grad option for this year. So some of those students were IEP students, some of them were not. So if that does go away, then we've got a fresh batch of, let's say, 30 kids that need to pass these tests to graduate. So we're really altering the things that we're doing to make sure that we're meeting the needs of those students. The 18-month plan is something that we've been working on for the last semester, and it is really laying out what we're going to do for the next 18 months. It's a four-part plan that works on teaching and learning to address that Tier 1 instruction in the classroom, assessment to make sure that we are bringing the best tools to the teachers and to us to make sure we know how the things that we are doing are working and to change instruction in the classroom, culture and climate to make sure that we are asking students and teachers and all stakeholders about specifically what their needs, wants, and desires are, and then lastly, ultimately, the student experience. All of these things play into the personalized learning that we've been really focusing on the last 2 years. But we want to make sure that we're putting specific monumental checkpoints in laying everything out by specific dates for the next 18 months. I won't get too far into the details with that other than just kind of letting you know that there is some type of plan, and I'll refer back to that a little bit as we go on. I'm going to have Mr. Williams talk a little bit about some of the assessment piece of that 18-month plan.
So we used Procore this year, and we learned a lot going through that process. It was the first time we used Procore, and Procore is a software program that is gives a lot of feedback at the high school level for the various tested areas, and it's basically broken down into two different parts. We have the diagnostic part, and there are three large assessments. There's Form A, Form B, and Form C. We give Form A towards the beginning of the year in August, September. We have Form B scheduled for this next school year in late November, early December, and then Form C is scheduled in March to get that last bit of information before we go into the air testing so that we can intervene with kids. We have, after each one of those larger assessments, we have those will be followed up by data team meetings. So the social studies department will meet with us and go over their Form A data. The English department will meet with us and go over their Form A data so that we're making informed decisions and really making a strong effort to expand the data culture in our building. That's a big thing that we know we need to work on is our data culture. The second part of Procore is the formative assessment piece, the short cycle assessments. And those are based off of classes. So Algebra 1, Geometry, ELA 1, ELA 2, American History. And those are planned and on the schedule right now for the upcoming year. The teachers will have input into those as well. But each one of those assessments, when they're given, we will have a teacher-based team meeting. So a smaller group, so not the entire English department, but maybe just ELA 1 will meet with us. And we will review those results that those kids have from the short cycle assessment. And then the critical piece is, what do we do with that information? Because just to have it and look at it and say, oh, that's nice, is one thing, but how are we going to change our instruction? What are we going to do to address the needs of those individual kids that didn't do well? Or how are we going to keep those kids that did do well moving forward? They shouldn't stay behind just because some other kids aren't quite there yet. So we have a very structured plan in place for assessment. We have room for teachers to give us feedback and adjust things, but they're already on our calendar. We have a Google calendar, an assessment calendar, and so the teachers are aware of those and when they're going to be sitting down with us. We have an agenda set for those so that we can track it and know what we talked about last time and go back, circle back, and make sure we talk about it this next time. Chris Campbell has been a tremendous help with that. It's things that a lot of elementary teachers have been doing for a while, but not many high school teachers. So he's been a tremendous help in leading us through that process and putting these structures in place. We also have some of the blended pieces we have. We have software programs. We have an ALEKS program for math. We have Language Live for English. We have APEX, which we use for our summer school currently. And we also have Study Island. So we're going to be using different software components for different interventions based on what the individual student needs. Another thing that we've done to expand the data culture, we created a data room. So all of our data team meetings and our teacher-based meetings are going to be in this room. It's on the second floor in A Wing. And you can see there on the far left, that's our assessment schedule. We have other stuff on that schedule too, just so we can visually see how everything's laid out for the year. We also have assessment results that are up there. There's another set of posters that you can't see in this picture, but it's got all of our incoming freshmen and how they scored. And are they at risk? Are they high risk? Are they moderate risk? Are they advanced? So we know on an individual basis where everybody is. And I think, to me, this is going to be extremely valuable. This is going to let staff know that we are serious about expanding the data culture, and we're going to have, we also had dry erase boards put on the opposite wall of this, and we have magnets that we can put individual student names in, and we can track progress. So you start, and your magnet might be in the far left, but hopefully we're seeing your magnet move to the far right as time goes on. Just try to do more things that are visual, that we can see, that we can, the teachers can see, that we can do things to expand the data culture. And I'm sure there's things up right now that might change as the year goes on, as we see different things that are important. But I'm really excited about this room because I'm such a visual person, and it just helps me understand the whole process better to see it. And I'm hoping that it will help our teachers understand it too. And just having a dedicated space to that, I think, shows them that we are serious about expanding the data culture and also expanding the change in our building and in instruction. I think that's all I have.
And so one thing that we have definitely done in this room, I think Sean alluded to it, is we've identified freshmen coming in that are two grade levels below or more in math and English. And we've created a hybrid block schedule class for students who are going to be in Algebra 1. So we took the iReady data. Every student that is two grade levels or more below in math is now going to be in a hybrid block with an IS and a regular ed teacher. And we're going to do blended model, workshop model type of classroom, tier one instruction in there that's really based on making sure that we're doing short cycle assessments and meeting the needs of those students in a much quicker and much more purposeful manner. Because we know that this group is going to need that intervention, so they're going to get seven periods a week instead of the typical five that another student might get. Portrait of a graduate. This is something that we worked on last year as well, trying to identify specifically what a Marysville student should achieve or what success they should have when they're in school, and have Mr. Stackhouse talk very briefly about what the portrait of a graduate is to our students.
Yeah, we worked on this, like Tom said, over the past year, and it all started with our building leadership team, and then we rolled it out with the entire staff. When a student graduates from Marysville High School, we want them to be more than a student who graduated from Marysville High School. We want to make sure that we are putting kids out there to be successful in whatever facet of life they choose. We want to make sure that they're ready if they choose to go to a post-secondary school, whether it's 2, 4, technical, whatever that may be, if they are ready for a career or to be workforce related, or if they go into the military. So whatever that field looks like that the kid wants to do, we want to make sure that they are well prepared for that. As staff, we want to make sure that we're supporting, we're empowering, we're challenging, so that kids can thrive. Those are some of the key words that we came up with for our mission statement. As a graduate from Marysville High School, we want to make sure that our students are civically responsible. You know, we work a lot with citizenship, whether it's local or global communities, that sort of thing. We want to make sure that they have a strong knowledge and cultural awareness. We want to make sure that they're self-directed learners. We want to teach them to continue to push themselves to be strong academic people, whether that's while they're in this building or after they graduate from Marysville High School. We want them to be skilled communicators, and those are things that we work on in a day-to-day on a day-to-day basis within the classroom. There's so much more to communication than just listening and speaking. Those are some of the things that we want to continue to work on. We want them to be effective collaborators. We want to make sure that they're able to work in teams. And last but not least, we want them to be innovative thinkers. We are hopeful that our kids are going to take us to the next greatest things, you know, with generations to come. So we want them to be outside the box thinkers and continue to move us forward.
The last thing we're going to finish with is probably what I'm partial to and very excited about, probably the most excited about, is our pathways to kind of address the things that Scott just talked about and that Sean was discussing as well. We have four new pathways for next year in business, theater, agricultural sciences, and auto tech. And so what we're doing is looking for ways that we could match what we're saying that students need to have as far as the skill set with making them also employable, interested in school. We want to make sure that they have something that can make them passionate in the classroom, but also is very useful. In the business side of it, partnering with High Point and our own business department, we've got four really neat, I think very special, different groups that we're going to be looking at as far as a pathway. The insurance certificate, to my knowledge, and if I'm wrong, I'll take it back, but we're the only high school in the state of Ohio to have started the insurance certificate pathway. There are about 10 post-secondary institutions that have started this. Essentially what it is a suite of classes that the 15 largest insurance companies said, we need workforce development in these areas. We're not getting the people that are coming out. We've got a glut of, or a lack of 25,000 potential jobs in the next 5 years. We don't have the employees to hire right now. They're not coming out of high school. They're not coming out of college. We say you need to take these classes to be employable. If you take those classes and get that insurance certificate, that you can start here at Marysville High School with about four or five classes. You will have to probably take three or four classes after Marysville High School. Hopefully we can add those as we go forward. But if you get those, these insurance companies promise you an interview. And that is a very, very big deal because they do not give interviews to very many people. Now, obviously, you're not going to be the CEO of Nationwide if you show up with a certificate. They're going to interview you for the position that you are capable and qualified for. But getting your foot in the door is the biggest thing because many people do not get their foot in the door with these large insurance companies. A business certificate is our partnership with Columbus State. If you take the business certificate courses here, it is equivalent to the first semester of a business admin associate's degree at Columbus State. So you can complete the first four or five classes here, then you would go right into your second semester potentially in your business administration. Logistics engineering and technology, LET is a new one. That's got a 2+2 agreement with the Ohio University. I shouldn't say the Ohio University, but Ohio University. It's a 2+2 agreement, so you could get your LET certificate here and then enter right into Ohio University to get your four-year degree based on that. That is basically kind of like a supply chain management type of pathway, but then a four-year degree on top of that as well. Theater arts, also with High Point we're partnering with. We've got these four classes next year in performing arts. We obviously know how many kids are into performing arts in this school, and a lot of students do go on into the performing arts field and do that as a profession. Ag sciences, we've got a lot of pathways in ag sciences that we're going forward with. Vet science, turf and landscape management. We've got some great partnerships with Ohio State. We've got some input from for the turf management from the lead turf management advisor with the San Francisco Giants. So we're really trying to bring all of these partners in to work with our students to give them a real real-world experience. And then AutoTech is the partnership that will be at the STEM school with kids from MHS and the STEM school as well. And so we're very excited about all of those pathways. So that, in a quick nutshell, is kind of what we're looking at for the 18-19 school year. We really know that we need to address our deficiencies and do right by kids and make sure that we are giving them the best opportunity to be successful here and then also beyond their years at Marysville High School. So we're proud of what we do, but we also know that we've got a lot of work and a lot of areas of deficiencies that we need to work on and get better at, and that's just what we're going to do. So I'm going to finish before Superintendent Minkins tells me I forgot this. We have a community partnership award with Kyle Stebbs. Kyle could not be here. He was very, very honored and actually very touched about the fact that we picked him to receive this award. Kind of ties into that 18-month plan and kind of the cultural shifts that we're trying to make in the building. Kyle worked for Scotts for years and has worked as a human resources trainer and manager in many different companies. And what he does is he comes in to companies that want to change and make positive change, and he talks about what's stopping us from making those changes. So he worked with us extensively for about a good month, I think in the February timeframe, and we were preparing for getting our staff to be introduced to that 18-month plan and how all of this change is going to work in our organization. Because you have some people who are ready to go and they don't care what the plan is. Thanks for doing it. I'm on board. You have people in the middle, and you have people who are going to drag their feet. And he really came in and spoke to the staff about all three of those groups. And I would say that all the PD that I've been a part of, I would say the most positive feedback was what Kyle and the three of us put together for that day. It was mostly Kyle doing that presentation and training, but we kind of spoke about what needed to be done and what our deficiencies were. And the staff really, really enjoyed it. Even the people that you thought might not enjoy it said, thank you very much. That was one of the best PD sessions that we've had. So we've really relied on Kyle, so we will get this to him. He is honored, and thank you very much for that recognition. And with that, that is it.
We'll give him a round of applause.
All right, there you go.
Our questions, so thank you, Tyler. So now, questions, comments?
I do have a question.
Sure. Yes.
Okay, so like I have a granddaughter who wants to be a vet.
Okay.
So now, where does this come in on the veterinary and animal science area as opposed to the STEM school?
I don't know exactly what the STEM school would do. I will say this is more towards a vet tech type of certificate.
Oh, okay.
So I would say, I guess it's a twofold answer.
Okay.
I think either way would be great. You would not do this without taking some of the upper level sciences if you wanted to go to veterinary school.
Right.
So I could see perhaps someone who is taking AP Bio and AP Chem and some of those classes here at the high school taking those classes as well. I wouldn't know why you wouldn't. If you're interested in veterinary sciences, why would you get these experiences? Because we're partnering with like the large animal vet, Ohio State group as well. So I think it would be very, very useful. But I also know that STEM has a great pathway for veterinary sciences as well. Okay. So I would probably
so she has to sit down and kind of...
Yeah. Okay. So I guess in a long answer, I don't know which path would be best.
Okay.
But taking those classes alone would not be just your pathway to get to a four-year... I guess a veterinary is more than 4 years, but
eight years,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Going back to the portrait of a graduate, so I didn't catch all of them, but there were like civic responsibility, self-directed learner, what was there, like five or six of those?
Yes.
So how does that like intersect with or lay over the curriculum? Like you have to take a certain number of math or history or science or English, and that's what it means to graduate.
Correct.
But are these, what do you call them, goals or attributes of a graduate, are they integrated with the curriculum or do they run across it? How does it fit together as, in terms of them moving through 4 years of...
Well, the plan is that it will be integrated into the curriculum in each classroom.
Okay.
Because you do have some core areas and some non-core areas. But like, for example, if we're talking about being an excellent communicator, we want to make sure that even in art, you're having a chance to stand up and present your art project to the class. And so we're really trying to make sure that every teacher has a stake in making sure that those kids get that experience in their classroom as well. So really it's going to be kind of integrated throughout the curriculum. And the first piece of that is... we did not mention our personalized learning. We want kids to identify, and we want to commit to them as they commit to us about what they're going to do. And so we can then use that portrait of a graduate commitment as ways to support that learning. So if someone says, many times in a meeting, someone will say, I want to be an architect. Well, then we need to know that you've declared that officially, and then we need to match that through guidance and through our teachers as well to say, here's what you need to take to be an architect. To be a veterinarian. Obviously, if you say, I want to be a vet, then we need to make sure that you're perhaps taking those classes, but also taking those upper-level sciences as well.
Yeah, it seems like, I think I've only heard about this a couple times. Is this a new idea, the portrait of a graduate, or has it been a...
That's new for us. The concept is not new.
Like, for me, kind of from outside, like as a, let's say, a potential employer or, you know, somebody... accepting students into college or whatever, those attributes like civic responsibility, self-directed, collaborator, communicator, those are actually in many ways more important for their future success than like how many English credits do you have, how many history.
Absolutely. So our BLT team came up with that this year. And it was official kind of in the spring of this year. And so the idea is that those are the 21st century skills that you need to be successful. And you're right, whether someone got a 4.0 or a 3.0, at some point won't matter because you're going to have to sit down and communicate with somebody and be able to get your ideas and your thoughts across and be part of a collaborative team to be successful. So I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, going back, John was talking about the data collection, identifying students that may have some deficiencies and some that may need help and so forth. And the portrait of a graduate, is the data collection and the identification of those students, and I guess this kind of goes along with Ryan, I'm just trying to clarify myself, is that driving then the instructional model for the individual students so that they can achieve both the standards that they need to meet on the state test and at the same time also acquire the skills that we've identified that we want our graduates to have? Is that?
So we want to integrate it in the profile of all of those students so we can do that in the classroom and have them have some voice and choice and have some ways that they can make a class interesting and engaging for them. That's one area where, under that tier one instruction, where we lack, because we need to make it more engaging, because the student who does school well is always going to do school well. And so we need to find ways to engage them to do better, but also to engage the kid that's that marginal student who, hey, if I'm not into it, I'm not going to do well in this class because I don't feel like Algebra 1, for example, has anything relative to do with my own life. And that's where we need to find that engagement. And tying those in is specifically where we want to make sure that we have the needs of each student identified and then go about meeting those needs.
Thank you for giving a very good answer to my poorly worded question.
That's all right.
Okay. My quick question is in regards to the intervention that you're talking about with the second and third time test takers. The things that were mentioned seem to be like software based. I was just wondering if there's is there a blended or one-on-one?
So I did not mention that we changed our schedule a little bit. We went down from 3 lunches to 2 lunches, shortened the lunches, and then added another monarch period. And so what we added was another intervention period. So we have 3 intervention periods a week that are a period long. And so now we've already identified every single student that needs that second and third test. And depending on if they're in a repeat class, they might get the intervention there. But if they're not in that class any longer, then during that monarch period, they will be assigned to a teacher that, for math, it still might be Alex-based, but that teacher will be working with them face-to-face. So the short answer is yes. It's not just, we're not just going to house the student on a Alex computer in the corner of the room.
Okay.
But we're going to have teachers work with them. And then we've specifically identified where that second tier intervention needs to happen.
Okay. And my second question has to do with students coming to high school below grade level. So is this a function of, you know, people coming new into the district, or is it that people that have students that have struggled going all through the system?
Yes, it is students who have struggled all through the system. Simultaneously, K through 12, all these changes are happening. So that number is reducing, I know, in the K-4 grade levels right now as far as students who are struggling. So those are not, there will be move-ins in that group, but a majority of them are Marysville students. But that number, ideally, is shrinking as we go. Because I know that there have been some strong grounds made at the lower grade levels. But that's why we knew that that cohort of kids that are 2 grade levels below, they're going to come here regardless, and they're going to need some serious intervention. And I will say, even though we worked with them extremely hard, last year they were sitting in the same math class as a student that was perhaps right at grade level. And so even though you individualize instruction, it does make it very difficult if there's a huge disparity in the ability of Algebra 1 for those students. So with this model, they're going to get the same Algebra 1 curriculum, but they're going to be able to interact with it differently, have more one-on-one attention, and hopefully be more successful in their achievement.
And more time.
in more time. With that hybrid block, essentially what they're doing is first period they'll be in there every single day. Second period, twice a week, they'll come in there for an additional second period, and that'll be dovetailed with a study hall. So then if that student needs even a third or fourth period, then we could also work that out as well. And then the data is going to drive whether or not that student needs that even extra additional time.
I just want to start by thanking you all and commending you. I thought that was an excellent presentation, and I'm proud of all of you for, it's nice to be hearing this data conversation and, some comments that we haven't heard so much in the past, so
sure.
I really appreciate that. I'm kind of curious what you see as the biggest challenge moving in this direction right now.
I think, to speak for myself, I would say the biggest challenge is we need to make sure, when we talk about, you're getting sick of this phrase, expanding the data culture,
right.
We need to make sure that we're including the students as a full partner in that data culture, because we can stand up there in the war room and have all the TBT and all the meetings we want about
right.
these individual students. If they are not aware of where they stand and what they need to do and how they can get help and how they can grow, then really I think we're kind of beating our heads against the wall. So we need to make sure that we're figuring out organic ways to include them in there and to make sure that we have them also tracking their abilities and seeing those small performance increases so they can have hope as well. Because it's quite devastating for a kid that gets a 660, comes back, and then gets a 670. The growth measure will say that that kid had A growth.
Right.
But for that student, they feel disparaged because they're no closer in their mind to 700 and passing that error score before. But
right.
just getting them to also understand that where the data is saying and where they can get help and where they can help themselves as well. And get our teachers to buy into that being as an important piece as them knowing what's going on.
I think also it's not just about the data, it's about what do we do with the data, how do we change the instruction.
Yes.
The instruction has to change.
Yeah.
You just look at the data and do everything the same.
Yeah, to repeat that tier one instruction then, as a teacher, when you get back the data and it says 20% of my kids didn't get it, then what happens on Tuesday?
Right.
That's what needs to change, is that you're doing something immediately differently. Because I'm not trying to label this school, but high schools in general, I've been in several high schools.
Mm-hmm.
Usually if you get a 80% passed and 20 didn't,
mm-hmm.
most people would say, hey, that sounds pretty
good.
Right. Let's move on. But that 20% is 40 kids,
right?
You know, it's 50 kids, it's 60 kids, it's growing all the time, and that's somebody's child
mm-hmm.
who it's not acceptable to be in the 20% that's not passing or higher.
And do you, like with your staff and professional development, feel like they are, I guess, do you feel like they're going to be on board? Do you have concerns there with staff jumping on? I mean, obviously,
I think we had a great first step with our cohort group. I think that is a great first step for us.
Yeah. So our cohort group, we have 13 teachers
right.
who are basically saying that we are willing to go to standards-based grading right now, and we're going to be the pioneers to do that.
Yep.
So they have already committed to, by the end of the year, to really not be using anything that looks like traditional type of grading measures,
right.
Whether it's multiple retakes, mastery type of things that we know they do at the STEM school. And so we're using this group, and 13 teachers is a large percentage. We got somebody from every single department to make sure that it was also well represented. So no one can say, well, hey, that works in art, but that's not going to work in chemistry.
Right.
So we really have everything represented, and that group is ready to go. And then what we're going to do is, as we start in August, start to iterate that with the rest of the staff. So they have to be on board, I guess.
Okay.
that's where we're
right.
moving.
Right. That's what they're charged with.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I mean, I certainly tonight's presentation was much more representative of, the conversations we've been having over the past year, as painful as they might have been at times. I've told you before, that shift from the 13 people to the 60 people is, I'll call it a hurdle, because we can get over a hurdle, right? But that is the, the hurdle is creating that enthusiasm, that change, that, but I think I heard you mention more than once that we need to do better by kids, and I think that's absolutely spot on.
And I think even just the, you know, the excitement that we hear from you guys, I mean, that's a really, it needs to start with you, and so go get them, right?
Yeah, we are excited about it.
So what do we know about where Marysville grads go next? Like, do we have data on that?
Is there,
like, you listed basically college or trade school, work, military. I know a few kids that do long mission trips after they, like, what do we know about, do we know a lot about, is that something we are integrating into the goals and the programs, or is it just sort of,
yeah,
they graduate and then we're done?
So no one has ever kept that data here. So we joined a national clearinghouse because we could get Ohio data, but that was not representative of our students. So we just received two reports that are over 60 pages apiece. So I can't answer you to the full extent. What I can see as a quick overview is we have upwards of maybe 60% of our kids go on to some kind of further education. Only about, it looked like to me, 15 or 20% of those completed within a 5-year range. So the thing that says to me is debt accumulation.
Yeah.
Right? Especially that first year looks like a significant drop. So we need some more time to work through that because Mark just sent it to us last week, honestly, our first take at that. But what we're going to do with that data is match it to the data that we have with kids and start to look for trends. That's kind of what we talked about, Mark. That's his skill set. Uh-huh. And see if it's an us issue, you know, if we need to ramp up our science curriculum, if we need to ramp, whatever that might be. So that's kind of our next step going into next school year, is to really dive into that and get a better understanding of where kids are going. Instead of that, you know, and it tracks all of that, and it's a national database. So the criticism has always been you can only get Ohio, and now this clearinghouse provides that national landscape, private or state-funded institution. So it's really the first time that we've received that data.
And then on the qualitative piece, we've really made a push, especially this year, to start to ask students where they're going and then inviting them in 18-19 to come back during Thanksgiving or Christmas and to speak to our kids and say, we had somebody come back and meet Lynn Gordon, saying basically he's volunteering. That's what kind of clicked in my mind. He said, I want to come back and volunteer to talk to the kids, because he's doing something in IT, and we need to get that in front of the students as well, so they can see kind of like what the real world is. Say, hey, here's the classes I took in college, here's what I wish I would have focused more on in high school, or here's what was useful, here what wasn't useful, and getting almost like roundtable type things to go back on the qualitative piece, obviously with quantitative too, and then to really kind of ramp up with the portrait of a graduate. You said you wanted to do A. Here's somebody that's done that, and so now what are we doing here? Does that change your idea? Has it reinforced what you were thinking? Has it changed maybe what classes you were or were not going to sign up for? And those types of things.
And I think the pathways really, I mean, that's a great way to help start the kids thinking about what do I really want to do and am I excited about this? Because that's a great start for you guys.
And what we try to do with those pathways is we try to make it that if you're in the business pathway, some of the classes are crossover. So you could also get into a pathway and figure out that, hey, I started in supply chain management.
Right.
I really like this. Maybe I want to go to the logistics engineering technology and go to Ohio University and get the 4-year degree. Right. Because some of the base level foundational classes are the same classes. Same with the insurance certificate.
I mean, the business pathway really is the most robust, and the fact that it is aligned to workforce development gaps in Central Ohio and our region, right?
Right.
So
right.
The other ones are valuable because they meet what our kids look for. We have a strong performing arts, so I don't mean to sound that way, but the in the larger scope about keeping our kids close in a regional workforce, we know there's a significant gap, particularly insurance, which he spoke to. So that is definitely a workforce geared pathway.
And I would think that that would also open up some opportunities for maybe internships or even just having some of those people coming in and talking, you know, maybe kids, people that are closer to their to the student's age, to give them an idea of, like you said, what did I do and what do I wish I would have done, kind of a thing. So
absolutely,
good stuff.
Some of the things that you're talking about, I'm sitting here thinking about kids coming out of the eighth grade and trying to choose initially the pathways, and so when you get people to come back, if there's some way to kind of gather that information so that we get it to parents at the eighth grade level, maybe, so that they can kind of get a sense of what the distant horizon looks like and maybe make better choices as to which pathway in terms of the buildings and so forth. When Amy was talking about granddaughter going into veterinary medicine, we've got several different possibilities, and sitting down and trying to make, what kind of student, what do veterinary schools look for, what kind of high school experience, what sort of coursework would they be interested in getting, somebody interested in getting maybe more hands-on, or somebody interested maybe in more of a classroom environment. Those are the kinds of things I think, as we talk about opening up and having a decision day as to which kind of direction we go, that might be helpful to the parents and some of the 7th and 8th graders as they look for this.
Agreed, and it's a tough decision for a lot of families.
Because
you're dealing with, first off, an 8th grade student, and secondly, just the unknown of what's 8 years out and what's 10 years out.
Right. But I know that we have people in our community that are making decisions based on, some general perceptions, and they may not be focused enough on their own child and in terms of making the best possible decision for them. And if we can provide more information, give them some idea about the experiences that our students have had in the past, that might help them.
With that being said, I think it's important to know that we're dealing with 14, 15, 16-year-old people, and a lot of them are going to change their mind.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, just keep them engaged, right? That's the first thing. Keep them engaged,
like,
right?
At those meetings, we've had to talk some people off the ledge.
Right.
I mean, it's a very important decision, but it's not a path that you cannot.
So, many of them try and realize that's not really what they like, but there's an opportunity to try another thing and another thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Some of us are quite a bit older and still don't know.
Okay, well,
all right.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate
it. Okay. And let's see, we don't have any public participation, I don't think. Nope. Okay. So next up, the High Point report. Mr. Chivington was unable to be here tonight, so I did email you his report. I think sometimes these summertime reports, it's just a good planning time, but there's not really many student-related items on there. But as always, if you have any questions, feel free to contact him. So next, we have the superintendent's report.
I just have a few things. Levy group is moving forward, has lots of positive traction. They have a meeting next Tuesday night, making some decisions on some shirts and first steps. And I shared with you kind of their calendar events, I know, earlier this week. Stadium project, bids went out last week for Bunzel Middle School. The bid opening meeting is next week, and I think we talked about a tentative board meeting if needed, July
31st. Right.
So I just wanted to put that out there again.
Right.
Hiring, I think we are now down to two special ed aides at the high school. We will call it a wrap after that. Other positions would just be supplemental positions, coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Just an enrollment update. Kindergarten is still trending up a little bit from before, but we've hired a new teacher at Northwood and Maven, and that we're fine that way. Some of our elementaries right now are approaching caps for class sizes. Really the struggle at this point is elementary shut down in July. So people who are withdrawing, we haven't got the request for records. So let's say someone moved from Marysville to Hilliard.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't generated that withdrawal yet. So all kids are still sitting in there. So those numbers will start to flush out by the end of July, and we'll have a better sense of where we really are. But we are monitoring that every day. I get a report from the enrollment office. I also wanted to mention I met with Principal Chafin this week. We are planning a meet the principal evening on August 6th at 6 at the STEM school. So we'll look to publicize that. It'll just kind of be an open meet and greet, really, for parents or community members that would like to come in and meet him, probably 6 to 7 o'clock.
Okay. Treasure report.
For the treasure report, I'm going to give an update on our permanent improvement fund and the projects we did this year. Last couple of days, forgive me if I make a mistake. I just smack the table and start over from the beginning, because that's what I did for the last 2 days.
It's really the first time I've ever seen him frustrated.
So first off, just looking at our revenue for fiscal year 18, our revenue was $5.67 million. This kind of gives a breakdown of where that revenue came in. Largest category was our TIF revenue. That's actually about $1 million higher than what it was last year, and due to two components. About $500,000 is due to that finding the error in the calculation of some of that TIF funding over the years and the correction of that. So there's that additional $500,000. And then as well, due to valuation increase in the TIF area, the TIF revenue grew by an additional $500,000. And I would note that $1 million difference all goes into our stadium fund. So the next largest area is our real estate tax at $2.1 million. Public utility personal property tax, that's been a good growing area of revenue for this fund as well as the general fund due to the growth and valuation of that AEP transmission plant. So that's $541,000, and then we have homestead and rollback at about $220,000. Looking at expenditures, total expenditures were about just under $5 million. I won't go through all of those since I've got slides for each, but our categories are transportation, maintenance, technology, curriculum, asphalt, and other. First category is transportation. We spent $618,000. We purchased 7 new school buses this year. We also had enough money left over to replace the receiving center truck. And I think a good example of kind of some of the flexibility we have with our permanent improvement forecast We were originally planning to buy 7 school buses. I think the plan was originally to buy 4. We had a couple accidents where a bus was rear-ended, and I guess fortunately the buses that were rear-ended were our older school buses, to where, you know, you looked at the cost to fix it versus what the bus was really worth, not to mention the time that it would have been off of the road, and we need all the buses we have to transport students. So, and not the, the third bus being the one that we had the accident on the field trip, that obviously had to be replaced because it was total. But it just made sense to just buy those 3 new school buses now, kind of borrow ahead from buses that we would have bought the next year. So that, I mean, Tina was very thankful that that worked out.
I just remember I went to a seminar about transportation, and they were just also commenting about the fact that the newer buses are so much more efficient than the old ones. So you, in the long run, you save some money that way too.
Right.
So.
Yep. And it's funny you mentioned it. We actually just looked into a grant to try to get some money for buses, but unfortunately, Union County doesn't fall into the, I don't know why, if it's an economic thing, but. Next category is maintenance. We spent $1.14 million. This is kind of a really broad category, but everything in here, for the most part, is part of our business manager, as well as our head of maintenance, has meetings with each building principal to talk about, you know, what they see as needs, as well as our head of maintenance has a, you know, great knowledge base of things in the district and things that are, you know, needing replaced there as well. This year, the biggest item is mechanicals, $867,000. To some extent, that's kind of the catch-all. It's, you know, it sounds specific, but it's really broad for the things that kind of fall into that category. Some of the biggies in there this year is a window replacement project at the high school. We did a district-wide security camera replacement. So we've got cameras that, you know, you can actually see somebody's face now and those kinds of things. So that was a big improvement for the district. And also there was a lot of money spent on some different masonry updates and I guess repairs across the district. Most of the other categories are relatively small. One thing I'd point out there in athletics, although the bill didn't actually hit in fiscal year 18, but we did redo the tennis court. The high school tennis court was resurfaced, so that was a big project. Then on the roofing side, we redid the Edgewood, the roof that's over the Edgewood office. That one was causing a lot of leaks, so that one was replaced. In technology, spent just over $1 million. Now in fiscal year 18, we were fully 1-to-1 for grades 5 through 12. One of the biggest expenditures, and will continue to be one of the biggest expenditures, is just the technology replacement cycle, or the computer replacement cycle. And another important thing that we were, I guess Tom was able to do this year, was improving the wireless network, which is very important now with the online testing that is done, so you can't have a network failure, you know, or internet failure in the middle of testing. So this was really bulked up to improve that. The curriculum side, I spent $392,000. What was updated this year was the Unified Arts and Electives adoption. Also, another big expenditure out of there is our College Credit Plus textbooks at $85,000. You know, I've mentioned that before. This is an unfunded mandate, and that's actually an increase of $20,000 compared to what we spent last year. Another one of our big expenditures every year is asphalt. This year we spent $1.1 million. Part of that is because sometimes those projects will, you know, start in one fiscal year, end in another fiscal year. So you've got a couple of different years' worth of budget that hit this year. The biggest projects that were done was Marysville High School. That was, I think, the back parking lot, if I'm pointing in the right direction. Bunsold was the kind of the bus turnaround area. And then also Edgewood parking lot. And then there's also, kind of adds up to a significant amount, it's just patching and smaller projects just across the district. The other miscellaneous category, really the big items that make that up is our copier lease comes out of there, debt payment for some money that was borrowed quite a few years back to do some different projects, including building the central office. So that's paid for out of our permanent improvement fund, and county auditor fees for a collection of our tax revenues. Looking ahead to next year, or I guess really this year, since we're in fiscal year 19 now, some of the bigger projects that we've got going on the paving side, we'll be redoing the Creekview South parking lot. Also be doing some of the asphalt areas on our playgrounds, replacing the HVAC unit at Raymond. Multiple buildings are due for a security system upgrade, such as the door, the swipe system at the doors, and those kinds of things for safety. Be finishing the Auto Tech pathway at the Early College High School. On the curriculum side, the math, I believe, Jonathan's not here right now, but I think math is what's up for this year. And then last, certainly not least, is our stadium project. That's all for me. Any questions?
Thank you. Nice report. Okay, let's see, my report. I did want to mention, you know, last month's meeting, before we adjourned, we had gone into executive session, and I had stated that there was going to be action taken when we returned, but we did not take any action, and that was because our discussions in executive session led to an opportunity to resolve the issue without board action. So just wanted to clarify that for the record. I just tonight, about 5:15, I sent our revised work plan. I emailed it to you all so that I could at least kind of tell you to look at it sometime over the next week or two. I know we've had discussions about a lot of different things, but when I went back and looked at my notes, I really only had three areas that I made changes in. So if you've got notes that are different than what you see in there, just let me know, because the goal would be for us to have a revised work plan on the agenda for next month's meeting. Our community coffee schedule. We had a community coffee this last Saturday, on July 14th. We had one person attend, and she brought information about open educational resources. I've shared that with our superintendent, but she also had some nice things to say about her daughter just graduated from the STEM school, and she was able to basically save about a year's worth of college costs thanks to that, so she was pretty pleased. Also, just a reminder, our capital conference is coming up November 11th to the 13th. We will need to be appointing the business delegate for the business meeting. So if somebody hasn't had the chance to do that and they'd be excited to do it, or somebody's done it in the past and they loved it and you'd like to do it again, let me know.
I'd be interested in doing it again.
Okay.
I did it last year, so.
Okay. I know Mr. Smith has done it a couple times. I've done it a couple times. So unless somebody else is just really interested, okay, good. Then that's already taken care of. Good. Oh, then we will have to actually vote on it. But thank you. I don't think I've commented in a board meeting yet, but our June Monarch Monthly newsletter came out. I think it was the very end of June or something. And I just wanted to point out that I thought it was an excellent newsletter. And if somebody hasn't read it, it explained the levy issues incredibly well, and also highlighted the fact that you and several of other administrators attended the Ohio Department of Education as guests to talk about personalized learning. So kudos to you. Japanese students are going to be visiting on August 18th. Yes, August 18th, Saturday, and so they have a welcome at 9 o'clock in the morning to 10:40 at the Honda Heritage Center, and a farewell on August 24th from 1:15 to 3 at Partners Park. So if anybody's available to attend either one of those events, it's just kind of nice. It's a chance to see these Japanese students and some other dignitaries and teachers that come with them. And then as Diane said, yeah, this is the exchange program. So their school system, their dates are different than ours. So it makes it a little bit difficult. They're coming in right at the beginning of our school year. So yeah, I can
I'll resend those dates to you all. And then just finally, we had talked about the potentially needing a special meeting on the 31st, and so really just wanted to kind of make sure if we had any time restrictions on that day. If we need that meeting, is like a, would you prefer to make it 4, 4:30-ish something? I think that's a Monday. What's today? It's a Monday, right? So I think Amy and Brian, you guys would be the two that would need to work around your
31st.
The 31st is a Tuesday. Okay, yeah. So I would, anytime after 4:30,
yeah,
I'm okay with.
Fine.
Yeah, after 4:30.
Okay, okay. So we'll see if we need that. And that's it. Legislative report.
I'd like to highlight a couple of things. Beginning of the report, there are a number of bills that were sent to the governor for the signature, and in general, those reports or those pieces of legislation contained a number of really positive things. One of those bills that went before the governor was House Bill 216. And it incorporated legislation from House Bill 707 that had to do with some funding for e-schools and so forth. But as Todd pointed out, we spent $85,000 on books for College Credit Plus. House Bill 216 had a provision in it that would have split the cost of textbooks 50-50 between the student and the school district. That was removed from the bill at the last minute. So we will continue to pay the full cost of the tax or the textbooks. I'd also call your attention to a bill 428 that deals with student religious expression. Passed in the House, has been sent to the Senate, and one part of that bill prohibits schools, public schools, from rewarding or penalizing a student based on their religious content of student homework, artwork, or other assignments. And that area has the potential to maybe create some conflicts in the way in which a student completes an assignment. But teacher expectations or the curriculum expectations are for that student. Two other bills that were introduced relatively late in the session, and I don't know how much traction or interest that they're going to have. House Bill 658 requires the school district entity to report to parents if a student has symptoms of gender dysphoria, if they are exhibiting signs of being transgender. That bill does not have any co-sponsors. It was introduced late, and it might not go anywhere. And the other bill that I would call to your attention is House Bill 703, and this creates exemptions for concealed carry permits and allows someone with a concealed carry permit to bring a gun on school property, and has within it prohibitions against boards of education from discharging, disciplining, or discriminating against employees or contractors who are lawfully carrying on school property. And kind of takes out of the hands of local school boards the ability to make a decision as to whether guns should be on their campus or not. So, again, I don't know where those two bills are going to go. Neither seems to have a huge amount of support at this time, and we're in the last last session, so if things don't get passed between now and the end of the year, they're gone and would have to be reintroduced. But, you know, there's some things out there that have potential pitfalls, and I think we just need to be aware of those things and keep an eye on them. So, yes?
Yeah, this 658, you said you didn't know, like, where it stands.
Yeah, I contacted our lobbyist today, and he pointed out that there were two sponsors. They gave their initial testimony before committee. They talked about, because it's parental rights and protection of parental rights. Uh-huh. That's what they focused on in their presentation. They never mentioned this portion of the bill that deals with school notification or school teacher
notification. I happened to take a workshop a year or two ago on this issue of transgender, and I can't remember if it was a lawyer or a social worker who was presenting, but she made a very definite point that sometimes kids feel more open talking to people at school than to their parents.
Right.
And this actually specifically requires the school to tell the parents immediately.
Right.
So that goes completely contrary to what this particular expert was saying, that at least in some situations that was not in the child's best interest in her experience.
Right. And that seemed to be kind of the sense that I got from our lobbyists, that you had two members of the House. There's 99 House members. So two of them had submitted this idea. They got at least no initial support from anybody else, and they avoided bringing up what might be one of the more controversial aspects of what their proposal was. So he was suggesting that there was already some opposition to this.
And the other one that struck my interest was the 428. Do you know what's driving that? There's a lot in there.
And there are a number of sponsors on that bill. And I think my personal impression is that the Republican Party, which is the dominant party in our state legislature, there are a number of people in there that feel strongly about religious expression, religious freedom, and they feel that in various ways that there are some limits and impositions on that, and I think they want to try to make sure that students feel that they can express their religious opinions and feelings. I know as a teacher, I used to, you know, tell the students if they wanted to say a prayer in school before they ate lunch, that was perfectly all right. And if they wanted to say a silent prayer before a math test, they thought that was going to, you know, provide, you know, some guidance as they worked through the question and so forth. That was perfectly all right. And really what was limited was the ability of a teacher to get up and to require participation in religious activities and ceremonies, purely religious activities and ceremonies. The limitation on students, at my understanding, is generally it cannot be disruptive to the educational process. And so, typically, religious expression, we have prayer before school around the flagpole, or maybe have a group of students that meet at lunch and sit, and, you know, or after school, and our school makes our buildings available. We've had, and I think we continue to have various groups, some of which are religious, that are utilizing our school buildings. We make facilities accessible and so forth. The provision that I highlighted in my notes to you has to do with the homework, artwork, and other assignments where if a teacher, say in a science class, had a science point that they were trying to make and the student answered with a religious belief, that could create a conversation in terms of the academic curricular objective of the lesson and whether the student understood the scientific principles and so forth. And so I think, you know, it's never been, as a teacher, I would never felt like that students couldn't express their religious beliefs in the school setting. They just needed to be respectful of the educational process that was going on. So, and as educators, we need to be respectful of their religious beliefs and perspectives.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Next up, Safety and Drug Committee report.
I have nothing for the group tonight. Our board, we kind of did some training and stuff with somebody from the, actually she was from the Air Force and doing some different things for surveys and stuff. So I have nothing to bring, except that it has been pushed back a little bit, the law for the marijuana passage. So.
Right.
But not that far.
Okay.
It's not months or anything.
Okay. Thank you. Next, I need a motion to approve the minutes from last month's meeting.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Savage.
Second.
Second by Ms. Powers. Any questions, comments? And roll call, please.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next on the agenda, I need a motion to approve the superintendent contract as written and the treasurer contract with a 0.5% increase for the fiscal 19 contract year.
So
motion by Ms. Powers.
I'll second.
Second by Mr. Smith. Comments?
I think that we have two of the finest educational leaders in our state.
If not country.
In the world.
World. There you go. There you go.
The physical position that we're in, the fact that our audits have won recognition and awards, our district is being recognized within the state and across the nation. We have administrators that are making presentations at national conferences, testifying before Congress, and so forth. I think speaks to the fact that our district is moving in a good, very positive direction. And the leadership sets the directions. Leadership gets the arrows pointed in the same direction, to quote a very knowledgeable person. I think that the goals that were set were very lofty, and in all cases, I think they've been exceeded.
Ditto.
So I'd like to thank you both for your vision.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very important for a district or even a business to have a vision of where we're going. And different people will move towards that vision goal at different rates, but the point is that everyone's still going in the same direction. And vision is a gift, and we're very thankful that we have vision both from a fiscal standpoint and from a organizational standpoint. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Comments? No? Yeah. I couldn't agree more with you. I also just appreciate the collaboration between you two, how well you work together, how really your focus is on our students, as it should be. And I think we really enjoy our governance team and how well we get along. And it's an honor to have you leading our district. And we're proud of everything that you've done and very excited about this coming year. I mean, every year it's like, woo. Can it get any better? And it does. So, thank you. Roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next up, we need a motion to approve the Treasurer CFO action items.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Savage?
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith. Any comments?
June wraps up our fiscal year 18, as I've mentioned, so cash flow was very strong this year. Revenue exceeded expectations. Expenditures were less than expectations, so that's kind of the both where you'd like to be. One item I'd note on the appropriations adjustments, we received a grant, I think it's right around $30,000 from the BWC. I believe it's towards special education, and they'll be able to use that towards, I believe it's something along the lines of some like furniture or items that they would use to move and transport students.
It's a pulley system.
Thank you.
Okay.
So it would help with kind of reducing potential injuries to our staff. So that was a good news.
Good. Any questions? Comments? Nope. Okay. Roll call.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next, we need a motion to approve a volunteer paid club coach for MHS football of Mike Powers. Motion by Ms. Savage?
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith. Roll call.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Stay.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next, we need a motion to recommend to approve to pay Paul Devine for 4 days of CPI training and as an MHS freshman football coach. Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Ms. Powers. Roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Abstain. Motion carries. Next on our agenda, whew, that's a weird word. we need a motion to approve the superintendent items.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Powers. Second by Ms. Savage.
Several new hires listed on there. You'll also see extended day. There are certain employees that get extended time throughout the school year, so those are up. An extensive list of supplementals. Also, you have the second an approval of policies, the second read. Calamity plan. It's really no different than what you've had in the past. We just have to submit that annually to the state. You can already see that Kevin and Ryan have signed off on that.
Mm-hmm.
As well, there was a masonry bid on. Basically, they have done some other work in the district and finished up early. Mm-hmm. So this would be to add the early college in for them to start on next.
In reading through the policies, I know that, you know, almost all of them, or all of them, are required.
Yes.
Changes in the law and so forth. I know the teacher administration evaluations, the value-added component was typically the thing that was removed from the evaluation. And there were some changes. You and I both had an opportunity to voice our support for some of the changes in the rules, and those are now being enacted in policy. And so I think that that program is improving, I think, it's moving forward in a very positive direction. One other policy was the AKA, the recruiters, given two opportunities to meet with students during the course of the school year to try and get that. So I know with all the other things, trying to get that in there is going to be difficult. I know that's
I also noticed that on the policy related to college credit plus, there was some language change in regard to that it can't be remedial college classes, which I think is a...
We've never really given permission for them to take remedial courses anyways. Mm-hmm. Everything we offer would not be that you have to test at the entry level, but that was a hiccup, especially for districts who kids were going off campus to take courses, so they didn't score high enough in their placement tests. They were taking the remedial course on the college credit plus dime. So that is a significant, and it really the probation language is positive. I mean, that's been a struggle for us for a kid to fail a class and then automatically get to take another one So I think we're excited about that language as well. We still have to work out what that's going to look like exactly in the buildings, but it's a good addition.
I know our state legislators were excited to see some of these changes.
Yep.
Senator Burke said that he supported this, but it didn't work out the way it was explained to him.
Right.
Well, and it's like anything, it's evolved, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as issues come up, then you address them and come up with something that can kind of minimize that issue.
On the hiring side, Deb, I know, and Todd has told us about this a little bit, but Deb Carpenter is resigning and moving to
Buckeye Valley.
Yeah. And so I just kind of wanted to thank Deb for the fine job that she's done, and I know that she has a replacement that's in training right now, and Deb's been able to be here for a few weeks to help that with that transition, but we wish her the best.
Yeah.
So, and also notice we have a new food services director on there, so... coach, baseball coach, so lots of things happening. Okay. Can I have a roll call, please?
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. And we are now to the comments and questions from board members.
I think the report that
hope it's not that tough. Right.
So, thank you very much.
Again, thank you very much for hosting. Very much appreciate your report today.
Thank you. Enjoyed your presentation. So, looking forward to see how my granddaughter goes. what she's going to do with that next year. thank you for everything, you guys. It's been fun to work with you two and to be able to actually enjoy going to meetings, seeing all the progress and everything that you guys do for us. So, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Cochran. I enjoyed the presentation as well. I learned a lot, and it's good to kind of see the big picture and what's coming up next. Good luck this year with everything. I also wanted to say it was a pleasure to vote in support of the contracts. I really appreciate your leadership, your commitment to the schools, and the growth and change that we've seen the last few years, which is very much due to our leadership. I know if I was picking a place to settle, I would be very happy coming here to have my kids go to these schools. I'd be happy to come here to teach. And so I thank you for your work, and very pleased that we're able to approve those contracts. Thank you.
I would just thank you all for the kind words. I appreciate it. Appreciate your support and encouragement, and also appreciate the contract.
Ditto. I mean, entering my seventh year, and it really doesn't seem like I've been here that long. And if you think about year one to year seven, year one we were talking about having to lay people off, to year seven were in the best financial position that the history, in the history of the district, is pretty amazing. And that couldn't be done with our, without the collective us. You know, I think Sue mentioned it the best, that about being a part of the governance team. And it's a pleasure to serve here in this community and for our kids, for sure.
Well, I mean, we made a commitment from the very beginning that we were going to be a governance team. And everybody stuck to their guns, so we appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Cochran. Appreciate the presentation, and I'll be excited too to stop in and see some of the new exciting things going on in the building. Our next community coffee is
August
11th. Thank you so much. With that, a motion to adjourn. Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Ms. Powers. Roll call.
Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Ms. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carried.